So according to some economic theories, we're told that the success of the rich raises all boats in the water. But a new congressional report on the wealth gap in America we've been talking about all week suggests that if the rich accomplished anything in the past 30 years, it was more like freezing the water and putting it up at some high elevation most of us will never see.
That's an image.
In the time it took the top 1% of Americans to triple their incomes, a 300% gain, between 1979 and 2007, the middle class made a modest 40% gain, while the lowest incomes grew a downright paltry 19%. It's the kind of statistic that gets you hopping mad, but is it the right way to look at the state of the U.S. economy right now? Amity Schles is the director of the Bush Institute's 4% Growth Project and the author of The Forgotten Man, A New History of the Great Depression. She joins us now. Amity, good morning.
Good morning.
It's nice to talk to you again. Let's start with that first question. Is the Congressional Budget Office statistic on the growth of the income gap over the last 30 years the right way of looking at the U.S. economy?
Nope.
All right. And what would be a better way, and what does it miss?
What it misses is the emphasis on how the lower earners are doing, especially. The part of that outcome that's troubling is that lower earners aren't making more money, aren't doing better than they were before relative to themselves. What matters is how you do relative to yourself, relative to your parents. If you're not doing better than your parents, and that's one thing we are hearing about protests now over, that's a problem. If you're not doing better than your own self, that's a problem. If you're not doing better than you expected, that's a problem. When you start comparing relative to others, it's not as relevant because it's quite possible for others to do way better and you to improve as well. If you look at it in a zero-sum way, you end up, one, living a life of envy, but two, missing the reality, which is that growth is for all. The pie grows a little more. That means everyone gets some more often. So that's where I would emphasize it.
All right. We're talking with Amity Schles, who is commenting on the wealth gap statistics that the Congressional Budget Office presented this week and which we've been talking about all week. We talked with a woman by the name of Catherine Wild, who's the president and CEO of the Partnership for New York City yesterday. And she wanted to focus on a couple of structural changes that she has seen over the last 30 years that make it much more difficult for people at the middle and low end of the economy to find a way in to grow. Listen to this.
We lost our manufacturing base, which was the key sort of entry point for into the middle class in this country for many years. And our education system went in the wrong direction. And so people really weren't well prepared to assume jobs in those growth sector service industries where we were creating them. So we've had a number of factors, and then of course most recently we saw the loss of value come out of our housing market, and a home was the one secure piece of savings and wealth accumulation that most Americans had.
Amity Schles, are those assumptions that the middle class has traditionally made in the U.S. economy no longer valid? Entry points in manufacturing, wealth of the home, those kinds of things?
I would say entry points to work, to valuable work, to skilled work. And the problem there, or one of the big problems for us in the New York area and in New England, is that it's not attractive to create a job here. The reason it's not attractive to create a job here is the tax rates are too high and the regulation is too strong. Those are the two factors. So we all agree there are not enough jobs, good jobs, especially for younger people. What we disagree on is why.
And one of the premises in your writing about this wealth gap issue is that, it is the economic growth figure that really is the most meaningful one. But we've also seen statistics this week that suggest that economic growth goes along with a narrow wealth gap rather than a wide wealth gap. Is it possible that in a wide gap between the rich and the poor, it's harder to grow an economy, Amity Schles?
Well, historically, that has not been the case. You see the broadest inequities, the biggest gaps in times of riotous growth. Sometimes you have societies that are broke but equal. That's basically what Europe is. Historically, growth goes with inequality. You may have one study or one snapshot, but over time, I'm writing a book about Calvin Coolidge right now, and there was a lot of growth. And there was even, at times there was great inequality. So people got super rich in the 20s.
And was that a good thing? Because, I mean, what happened in the 1930s was the bursting of a bubble that was inflated in the
20s. That set up the Depression.
It's kind of hard to blame let's talk about 23, 24, 25, when people got automobiles. 26, when they got electricity, when they got aluminum, things like that, when they got a different kind of pan to cook with, when they got a telephone. If you go back to much of the 20s, it's hard to argue that growth was fake. When you get to the Gatsby period, where it's all a lie and champagne bubbles, maybe 28, 29, that's when the stock market did a lot of its rising. Some of us, stock market in the 20s went up to 381. Most of us think after about 250, it was an untruth. It was a fantasy. It was Gatsby. But the first part is wonderful growth. Sometimes it turned out that people became more equal, that the distribution tables looked fairer. Sometimes it didn't. It was one guy got rich on an idea. Either way, if the people at the bottom are doing better, it doesn't matter. What I'm saying is the emphasis on dividing up a pie is the wrong emphasis.
All right. Then, Amity Schles, look at these statistics. The top 1% tripled their incomes between 79 and 2007, while the middle class only rose about 40%. Look at those numbers and give me a sense that they're, in fact, hopeful numbers.
Well, they're hopeful in terms of tax revenues, which is what many doing the talking right now are demanding, because in that same period, the rich paid a larger share of the taxes. They're covering more of the taxes than they were before, and the bottom 50% are paying less. So what's wrong with rich people earning a lot more if they're paying a greater share, because we're having a discussion here about shares, I guess, of the taxes? That's not to say that some Wall Street banks shouldn't have been bailed out. I wouldn't make that leap. I don't believe that so many banks should have been bailed out either. But when you talk just about the narrow distribution issue, you want to ask who's paying the taxes. And
right.
If top earners are paying more, well, then you have less case, no case.
Another way of looking at the wealth gap statistics that came out this week, Amity Schles is the director of the Bush Institute's 4% Growth Project and the author of The Forgotten Man, A New History of the Great Depression. Thanks so much.